This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Engage.
Engage.
Captain Picard.
Captain
Janeway.
Captain Sisko.
This is Captain Jonathan Archer.
Red Alert.
Photon Torpedoes. Fire.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Engage.
Engage.
Make it so.
With your host, Jordan Hoffman.
That, sir, is illogical.
And make sure history never forgets.
This is Engage.
Failing
frequencies open, sir.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the newest episode of Engage, the official Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hoffman, and Brian the Engineer is right here. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Jordan. How are you?
I'm doing great because we just watched the new episode of Discovery. You're doing okay because you got some con crud. You went to New York Comic Con and you're feeling sick.
Yes, I'm not feeling so great, but I'm pumped from the episode and I will power through it.
Awesome. Well, I took a lot of notes this week. And I just want to let the audience know we are not on Deck 44 this week, are we?
No, we are not. We are recording on location.
We're on location, and Lieutenant Stamets and his spore drive, that can almost have a ship exist in two locations simultaneously, as it zips across time and space. That's how this episode is, because we're both at home, and if it's funny, podcasts. Streaming service, all access, you would think this is a very high-tech operation. The lo-fi workaround we've done that you have concocted, Brian, you truly are MacGyver of podcasts.
This is my version of the sport drive.
I can't get into the how we're recording this, but if you saw an image of me on my couch in Queens, New York, with 1,000 wires all over the place, speaking into a I don't even want to get into it, but you know, that's the way it's got to be done, Brian, as you know, because we want to get this material to the listeners as soon as possible once the show is available on streaming on CBS All Access.
Yes,
but when the marketing department is so paranoid about letting even people on the same team like you and I look at the show ahead of time, it means we're watching it with the fans, which is nice. Because I like seeing it with the fans. I am one of the fans. You are one of the fans.
As am I, yes.
And it's great to be with the fans watching the show. It's a little bit of a pain in the ass when it's 9:30 at night when we're trying to get the podcast together. But you know what? As they say, heavy is the head that wears the crown, right? So with great power comes great responsibility. And that means we gotta hustle a little bit. So that's my commentary for tonight. Now, the other thing is, I am ready to say the following statement, and I want to know, Brian, we have not talked at all about tonight's show.
No, we have not.
I'm going to say episode 4 is the best episode yet.
Yeah. I will agree with that, yes.
I think it's getting better as we go. We're learning more about the characters, and it's just, I am so into it. And I'm also glad, it's kind of funny, just when I started to remember Landry's name, I was like, what is her name again? What is her name? Oh, it's Landry. I finally got Landry, because it was a joke all last week. I couldn't remember her name.
Yes.
I finally remembered Landry's name, and now she's dead. So
you can't forget it. You can't forget it sitting on a little screen, you know, going over a corpse.
Yeah, no, it's gone for now. So that was one of two moments during the show, and we'll deep dive through it, but two moments where I actually just went, oh shit. I just, you know, literally yelled out the oh shit.
Yes.
As if I was, in a screening room full of friends or something, even though I was by myself, I shouted out an oh shit. What about you?
I know exactly the other one that you just yelled oh shit for, because I probably did too.
What was that?
It's a little later on. You want to wait till we get to it, or
no? I'm curious if it was the same one.
The Klingons. When we first see the Klingons, they said, you know, they're for 6 months, and yeah. they're kind of scavenging, and they talk about that they ate Captain Georgiou. They picked her skull clean.
I think that was more of a, yo, whoa. I don't think I didn't actually shout, oh, shit. I just went like, did I read that right? Did I read
literally
that right?
Wrote, whoa, next to my note for that.
No, I shouted, oh, shit, when Laurel stabbed Vok in the back.
Yes.
But then reversed herself. Maybe. Who knows what Laurel is thinking? Maybe Laurel's playing both sides. But let's go to the beginning here. And first of all, I love that we finally got, first of all, the name of this episode, The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry.
Yes.
What is that a reference to? Is that reference to Lorca and his attitudes about getting the job done? Is it an attitude toward exploiting this sort of microscopic bug by putting nipple clamps on him and making him
the same thing.
drive the ship? Who is the lamb in this case?
I definitely think the lamb is the bug. The butcher is a joint of Lorca's directive to weaponize it and Landry's insistence of pushing Burnham to do that and not indulge her scientific curiosity. So we're the butcher. They're the butcher, and the lamb is the bug, the ripper.
All right, that the ripper, which is called a tardigrade, which is a real thing. Do you know what a tardigrade? If you Google tardigrade, you'll go, I've seen that thing before. It looks like a brown. It looks like a tarp, like a hefty bag, but like made of tarp.
Oh wow.
And it's got like a pig face and like a snout, and it's these are microscopic things. And they're real, and they're like, when you put them under a highly powered microscope, they look kind of like what this thing looks like, you know?
Yes. So I guess our big question is, how did that thing get so big? And was it initially that big?
Yeah, maybe it was, I don't know. There's a lot about the spores I don't understand. Let's get to the spores
here
in a minute, though.
Sure.
I want to say the opening of this episode was one of the kind of coolest little like visual sight gags in pretty much any Star Trek opening. There's one of the, I think it's, oh, I forget if it's First Contact or if it's, yes, I guess it would be the beginning of First Contact, as you see something spinning through space and then you realize it is a bottle of champagne and it's christening the new ship, the Enterprise E.
Yes.
And it's, of course, a bottle of Chateau Picard, which is nice. I'm pretty sure it was First Contact. It may have been in Insurrection. If it is, I apologize. But I'm pretty sure it was First Contact. And this, you know, the first shot is we see, you know, electricity, blue, you know, organisms or something, and just weird kind of special effects flying around. We're going, what the hell is going on? And it seems to be building to a crescendo. And the quote-unquote camera pulls back. And we reveal, aha, this is Burnham creating her uniform in the replicator. So we have now seen matter born into existence. We got a matter POV, which is like, you know, I remember the first time we saw a transporter shot from the POV. I think it was the Barclay episode where Barclay is, he encounters the people that are trapped inside the transporter. And we get to kind of see what it looks like to go through the transporter, the haze of that. Now we have seen the haze from the inside of the spontaneously generated matter inside the replicator.
And
which was really cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And I'm still so impressed by the visuals of this show. It is like, it is practically movie quality to me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You know, that shot specifically. But also a lot of the action stuff during the end when they save the dilithium base on planet blah 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 9, or I forgot what it was called, but yeah, that was really nifty. So that already just put a smile on my face, because you know it kind of impressed me that the writers of this show, many of whom we've talked to on this podcast, and we've certainly talked about, are definitely trying to, you know, really kind of work within the Star Trek that we know, but also do something new. Like,
yeah, a fresh take
on
it.
Yeah, they want to do a fresh take, but it's also, it's got to spring from something that is essentially Star Trek. Like, Star Trek fans kind of want to know more about the Replicator. You know, the Replicator was something that in TOS they never really talked about it. You know, they got their lunch out of a food slot, you know, and then sort of it crept into conversation, the Replicator. And then toward the end of Voyager or whatever, it was being used a little bit of as a narrative crutch. And then if you read the books, it's like there's so much stuff going on with the Replicator. But, you know, it's something to be fascinated about. How would a Replicator work? So it's clearly that, you know, they kind of had scratching their heads. How do we make this, you know, how do we make this new show visually cool, but also talk about stuff that people want to talk about? And it's like, well, what about an opening shot from inside the Replicator? That's never been done before. So I just thought that was really nifty. And then and she's got no rank, so she's got no little Delta shield on her chest. But the next cool thing is that she has a little bit with Saru. But before that, Cadet Tilly shows up and gives her
The container,
Philippa,
yes.
Giorgio's, yeah, the her last will, which she puts away. And Tilly, you know, I just want to say, I just congratulated the writers. I have to now scold them. They mistake the word. They said less when they meant fewer. Tilly was mumbling, and she said less words, and the correct grammar is fewer words. But one could counter, Brian, and say that that is actually in Tilly's character because she's nervous. So she would make that very common diction error. So
I would have made that error because I didn't notice it.
There are times, yeah, well, that's one of my pet peeves is correcting people when they say less and they mean fewer. I do my best to keep it within, but sometimes I got to let it out. So, but it was cool. But then there's the bit with Saru, and what did we find out? The little, what do you want to call them? The little fins that come out of his neck.
The ganglia, I believe they call them.
They have a name now. Yeah, threat ganglia. And he basically said, what they didn't do, I would bet you there's a draft six of the script is like, he says, well, they have a mind of their own, but they realized it would be too lame to leave that in. But
yeah.
But it was really cool, and it's set up so nicely because we see them in episode two when the battle starts. We see them again on episode three when the ship leaves, but she's not on it, and somehow he knows. And then we see it on the elevator, or the turbo lift, pardon me. And then at the end, she uses it as like a canary in the coal mine to like test out the Ripper, the bug. And that was, I just thought, really sharp. You know, that was like, you know, that's pretty good stuff. So, yeah, I dug the threat ganglia. And then they get to the bridge and they're doing like maneuvers. They're doing drills because, you know, there's Klingons are shooting them, but nobody's actually dying. And there's a lot of cutaways to the crew. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the crew, because some of these faces we've seen before and some of them we haven't.
Yes.
So, the woman named Kayla, who was on the Shenzhou, is back. And she's up front in like a Chekhov or Sulu-type position, right?
Yeah, she's front left.
Yeah, she's front left. So, she's, you know, that was where Data would sit. So, you know, she's important, whoever the heck, whatever the specific... You know, they don't have assigned seats, so you never know exactly who's sitting there. But she is clearly important, and she's got that facial, whatever you want to call it, I guess a plate in her face.
Yeah,
now,
which we all assume is, you know, result of the battle with
right,
the Klingons.
Right, the battle of the binary stars.
Yes.
And so she's up there, and then there are a couple others. First of all, there's like cool white guy. I don't know who he is, but they keep cutting him. But, like, cool white guy with good hair. Do you know who that guy... Like, he kind of looks like a young Jim Brolin. Which is the son?
James Brolin?
James Brolin, yeah.
I can see that.
Jim Brolin is a fuck. He's like a young James Brolin or like a Dermot Mulroney type. Like, I don't think he's had any lines yet, but he's, like,
no.
In the back, and he's just like, hi, I'm like a handsome guy. How you doing? I'm real handsome. So they got him. Then there's the woman cyborg face that we saw in the last episode.
Yes.
There was a nice close-up of her, and she gets a line now. And,
I don't think I picked up on that.
It's during the chaos of that battle.
Okay.
She's like, shields are at 33%, and had like kind of a kind of a metallic sound in her voice, right?
Yes.
So I don't know what the character's name is yet, but she definitely was one of the people shouting orders. There was also a very young African-American woman in the front somewhere. I don't think she said anything yet, but there were some reaction shots of her looking worried as you know, fake Klingons were destroying their ship. But then, in the background, there was this dude. Did you see this guy? He looked like...
Yeah, it was a big old alien head. I can't even describe what it looked like, but it looked cool.
I took a snapshot. Hold on. Let me look at my stuff here. I took a snapshot, and yeah. So, oh, and Mr. Cool is behind him. So this mystery dude is behind him. So it kind of looks like the head is like the shape of like a like an upside down pear, or like a maybe like a tulip or like a garlic bulb is what he looks like, and he's got like red and orange and pink. And he's got, like, I don't know, like, kind of like holes for breathing and eyes all over the place. And the immediate question, and I have to, I took a snapshot and put it on Twitter, and immediately my colleague, Mr. Glenn Kenny of the New York Times and various other esteemed outlets, wrote back, how does he put on his shirt? And he makes a very good point. Because I don't know how he puts on a shirt. Now, the answer is zippers. You know, luckily these shirts all have zippers.
It does look like they have zippers, yeah.
But so this dude, and also has big hands too. This guy's got big hands. Oh,
that I didn't notice.
Crazy, have crazy nails. We really saw a lot of Klingon nails in the next bit. So anyway, this dude, and he's wearing silver, so he's Science Station. I love you. I need to know more about you, John Van Sitters. If you're listening, we need more information on this guy. He is great. I don't know what's going on with this guy. So that's my favorite guy of the day. So, I mean, it's just great though, really, because, even more so than in the recent films, which had a staggeringly high budget, the cutaways to aliens were like, okay. Like in Star Trek 2009, they go to the bar and there's that like kind of a dude, that Ron Perlman-ish looking dude in between Kirk and Uhura when they first meet. And that guy's all right, you know, but every new alien that we've seen in the background or like on the bridge that hasn't really spoken yet or we haven't been introduced to yet, they're all really, really cool. So,
yeah, I definitely hope they keep doing more of that, even though it's still kind of strange that we've never seen these aliens before and it's in the past, but that's okay. Keep them coming.
Yeah, well, we haven't seen hologram Skype calls, and we haven't seen and the bridge looks different, but that's life.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Engage.
Engage.
The official Star Trek podcast.
Energize.
So then the next big moment for me was Lorca, and it kind of gives Burnham her assignment, which is to, you know, we got this monster, figure out what makes him tick. And here's what I thought was interesting. I want to talk to you about this because, you know, as a viewer, I'm still trying to figure out exactly what is up with Michael Burnham, because I know, you know, we wouldn't be having the show about her if she wasn't a good person, you know, and she had a trauma as a child. She was raised by Vulcans. Then she was living, she's working in the Federation under Giorgio for 7 years. So she's a woman of two worlds, but she has, you know, an ethical North Star. Like, she knows what's right, even though she may have screwed up that one time. And she's been kicking herself for 6 straight months. You know, she blamed herself for the death and she blamed herself for the war, and she's yet to speak up for herself. And so here's the thing. Lorca, I think, thinks Burnham is someone different than she is. Lorca is like, Burnham, I want you on my ship because only you get me. He doesn't say this. I'm sort of reading between the lines.
Yes, I agree.
But he's saying, all of my, you know, this is a ship full of scientists, and damn it, we're at war, and I'm a warrior, and I need warriors, and thank God you're here because you're one of my kind.
Yeah.
And Burnham, I think, is thinking, am I? Is that really what I am? Like, I think she doesn't quite know. She doesn't say heck no, because she, you know, she doesn't want to fight. She's still in the, I don't, you know, when we first met her at the beginning of episode 3, she didn't care about anything. When it looked like that shuttle was going to crash.
Yeah, she was calm. Calm as all can be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The other three prisoners are freaking out, and she was like, I don't care. What am I going to do? Get killed? What? So what? You know, completely passive. No real complaints. But, you know, she really knew. But now, Lorca is a little bit more like, hey, I want you to be an ends justifies the mean type of guy, type of person. He thinks that he knows what time it is. And speaking of knowing what time it is, Brian.
What time is it?
You would know what time it was if you had an MVMT movement watch.
Yes, I would.
Do you know about movement watches?
I think I've heard about them before, but I'd definitely be interested in and like to hear some more.
Movement watches, and they are cool enough to sponsor this show. So I'm going to stop talking about Discovery for a minute and just tell you that these watches were founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality, minimalist products at revolutionary prices. And when you go to the website, you see a lot of really slick, modern, but classic and stylish-looking watches, and you would think to myself, man, those look great. They're probably $300, $400, $500. They're not. They start at $95. They are made for you know, there was a sort of a small company, independent group that put this together. They were two guys in their college dorm room, you know, like the Facebook guy. It's like the Facebook of watches is what
yes.
Movement watches. Two guys in their college dorm. They couldn't afford cool watches, so they made their own. They knew style, and they knew what they wanted, and they said, I'm not going to find it in the marketplace. I'm going to build it myself. Kind of like Lorca, when he's like, I need to find out how to teleport an entire ship across space and time. I'm going to do it myself with spore drives and like a microscopic bug, and I even though I don't really understand it. But that's cool. So dig this, and then I'll stop talking about it. If you go to MVMT.com/engage, MVMT.com/engage, you'll get 15% off of what you see, plus free shipping, plus free returns. And the watch has a really clean design that makes a great fashion statement. Now is the time to step up your watch game. Get rid of that Seiko and go movement. So go to MVMTwatches.com/engage. MVMTwatches.com/engage. And you will get 15% off, free shipping, and free returns. Although, who's going to want to return it? Only a crazy person. Cool. So that was... So after all that action, we had our first act break. Thank God, right? Because we needed it. I'm going to take a drink of water. Hold on. This is exciting. Then we got back to our Klingons. And, you know, we didn't see them in episode 3. And
we were talking about that last episode, that we were kind of wondering how they'd be integrated into the show, you know, on a week-to-week basis. And yeah. I was definitely surprised by how it went. So...
Yeah, no, it was interesting, especially like the main Klingons. So Vok and Laurel and everybody else on that sarcophagus ship. All the other Klingons are sort of united. You know, T'Kuvma has united the 24 and they're fighting the Federation. But ironically enough, the quote unquote torchbearer, who is, T'Kuvma's, chosen
successor.
Successor is, we've discovered for 6 months, floating. In space, kind of like how Burnham was floating psychologically in space. They're floating in space looking for dilithium crystals. They're looking to move. They've been damaged by the ship, by the battle, and the ship isn't going anywhere. And their people are starving, and it's kind of wild. But Vok is still very dedicated to his cause. And we finally got to, we got some really good scenes with Laurel.
Yeah, and she definitely stood out a lot more this episode.
I love her. I love her. She's awesome because you don't know what she's thinking. She's,
yeah.
Is she, in fact, loyal or is she mercurial and opportunistic? And we don't know. We don't know. We think that she's loyal. And then later she even says something when they decide to go back to the Shenzhou to find some old warp stuff. And is she coming on to him? Is she not coming on to
him?
Yeah,
no, I saw some Klingon romance signs there.
A little bit. She didn't like lip snarl or anything like Klingons of old would do, but she and I gotta say, you know, underneath all that makeup, she's an attractive woman, that Mary Chifo, I'll tell you. So it's a great scene. And then but before they left, there is the other guy, Cole, who's now got, we only saw him in a hologram form.
Correct, yeah. He was thus far. We saw him for that one scene and that was it so far in the second episode,
right.
I believe.
And now he has sort of like a red markings on his face. And I don't know if that's from battles or if that's a recent thing or I just didn't catch it when they were in hologram form, but it looked cool. You know, it looked wild. And he wins Voke's people over with chicken. Right?
Looked more like shrimp to me, but yes, he...
No, she definitely Laurel definitely like grabs like a chicken leg and chomps into it. Which is funny because if you're gonna go like the if you're gonna go the bird route, it should have been like one of those monster turkey legs from Disney World. But instead, it's like just maybe. I mean, but no, definitely at first when you see the food, it looks like seafood, which I thought was funny because when Lorca's in the ship and he gets interrupted by an admiral, he is eating what looks like crab legs.
It looked like some kind of seafood or crab leg or squid, yeah. Or something like that.
Yeah, so maybe this is a sign that he and the Klingons are somehow in cahoots because they like the same food. I don't know.
Possibly.
I doubt it. I think we got a little bit ahead of ourselves because we got to learn a lot more about the spore drives and that little guy on the ship now, which is the... Tardigrade, the Ripper of the Tardigrade.
Yes.
Which, it's funny because there was a little bit of, in episode either one or two, I forget which one, when I think it was two, when Burnham uses Kirk-like mental gymnastics to trick the computer into letting her out of the brig.
To escape the brig, yes.
Yeah, so it's like, it's like kind of like little homages to the original series. This sequence reminded me a whole lot of the episode The Devil in the Dark with the Horta, the silicon-based alien that leaves the eggs that the miners are, you know, accidentally killing the eggs or killing the children. So the Horta is killing the miners, and there's the famous no-kill eye, and, Spock does a mind meld. And it just sort of reminded me of, this beast. And there's also a physical resemblance, too. They're kind of these sort of, like, round, low-to-the-ground creatures there's definitely a mirror there between the Horta and this Tardigrade with Ripper because Burnham quickly discovers that this thing is not aggressive.
It's not a weapon.
It's not a weapon. Every time it has attacked a person, it's done so out of self-defense, even though it's still a little unclear what the heck it was doing on the Glen and how it got out, and how it killed the Klingons and whatnot. It's still a little bit mysterious. They're not 100% sure what it was doing there, how it got there. But the punchline is, and it's kind of great, weird sci-fi. The punchline is that this weird spore drive, which we know is doomed to never work because it doesn't exist in later science, in later Star Trek lore, this weird thing is somehow it folds space. It's sort of like the spice from Dune, or it, you don't really know how it works, or if it's conduits, or if it's the infinite improbability drive from The Hitchhiker's Guide, you know, where you're everywhere at once. It's a little bit unclear, but so, like, you know, it's fine. I mean, I'm sure if I really, really thought about it, I could figure it out. But what I love is that it somehow uses spores that exist all over the galaxy to somehow connect different spots in space-time, and you need a guide to help you manipulate it. And
a supercomputer you need.
Well, a supercomputer, so the supercomputer being a biological brain, and the brain being these little, you know, what exist in life, the tardigrades are these little sub-microscopic things, you know, quantum-sized creatures, and if they are the ones that hold the key to higher dimensional existence, which I think, and I get a little fuzzy when I start talking quantum mechanics, but I have tried to read one or two books about it. There is a little bit of truth to that, or at least I shouldn't say truth. There are scientists who have theorized that it's in the realm of the very small where higher dimensions will, you know, will exist. Now, why is this tardigrade big? And why is putting just sort of like nipple clamps on him going to power it up to the computer? That's kind of ridiculous. I mean, that was like real. That was just dumb. Like, I'm kind of with it so far. But like, Anthony Rapp's like, quick, you know, just put him in the room. And well, they had a great line. It's like, the machinery knows what to do. So they didn't even, it wasn't like they had to figure it out. Like, this machine that they couldn't get to work, it sensed that the bug was in there. And just...
it was a little convenient that that machine was sitting in there as they moved it over. And it wasn't really tested before they used it. But to go back to the origin of this Ripper... I kind of had the feeling that they found it is a microscopic organism, and they enlarged it for this purpose. How they did that, I'm not really sure yet, but I feel like it's not an accident, or it's not a naturally occurring thing.
I'm with you. I think that's a really good theory, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's how it goes down. I'm really not, because that sort of explains, you know, they said it was in with their stash of spores.
Well, in their stash of mushrooms. So
somebody somehow embiggened it, and when it got embiggened, it caused a fuss. So.
Because they don't grow their spores, they harvest them from other places, so that's why it probably hitched a ride, they found it, and they made it bigger.
I love that it's all spores. I love that it's all spores, because spores is such a great legacy on Star Trek. Like, you know, spores... you know, just sort of spat all over Spock's face and this side of paradise and made him logical, and he fell in love, and, you know, just spores in general, like, you know, Day of the Triffids and all that stuff. Just like, you know, it's just funny that, like, here's this big endeavor, you know, our overlord, CBS, you know, they're making such a big gamble on streaming and All Access and Star Trek and bringing it back and all this money. And what are they going to hang it on? They go, well, ladies and gentlemen, I give you spores. And it's like, this ridiculous.
I mean, we should have known better, being that they made a big point to call out Stamets as a, right. What is his title?
He is astromycologist.
Yeah, astromycologist, yeah. Yes.
You know, the real Paul Stamets is a real person. He is an actual mushroom expert.
Really?
Yeah, there is a guy. Yeah, he is a real guy. We got to get him on the show.
I think you've actually mentioned that in an earlier episode.
Yeah, there is a real Paul Stamets.
Okay.
And he is, you know, he's at, you know, whatever important university that studies these things. And if you slap his name into Google, the first one that comes up is a picture of him holding a giant mushroom. You know, it's just, and he looks like an awesome guy. So. Huh. So, yeah, that's the spore drive. So, no, I don't really understand it, but I love that, like, you know, Lorca's on the bridge like, damn it, we need more spores. And he's like, coming right up, sir. He's got a big jug of spores and throws it into the machinery. So it's pretty great. And then what happens is what the heck happens? How does there's a fight. They do their jump because they got to save this, you know, whatever the hell it is.
Colony,
they
save Corvin colony. 2, I want to say.
Corvin 2. Yeah, I like that. They do a jump, and Stamets gets injured. He bangs his head, you know.
That looked pretty, pretty nasty.
Yeah, you always see guys on Star Trek, like, you know, sparks fly up and they fall from their station. Well, here we got to see the repercussions. He really banged his face up, and he had to go down, and he went to the doctor, and the doctor gave him a nice diss. He said, if you don't stand still, you're going to look like a Tellarite, which I thought was nice. So behind the scenes, that doctor is supposed to be his boyfriend.
Like, yes, I got that vibe this time, and I know I said otherwise with his fellow colleague on the Glenn, but I definitely think you're right.
Well, I mean, that's just from what I know about the castings. That's the guy. Didn't come up in this episode. It was all business. Star Trek did not break any boundaries on episode 4, but maybe we'll see where it goes. We did not see a moment of familiarity between the two because they were in the middle of a battle. They didn't have time for anything else. But that was the guy. And
I'd like
the
to point
doctor
out
was
too-
fun, you know.
I'd like to point out that while we were watching, my wife jumped up like, "Oh my God, it's Ricky from My So-Called Life!" And that was that was the most exciting part of the episode to her.
There you go. Yeah, no, he was the doctor, and he was a good doctor. You know, he told him to stand still. He's gonna look like a Tellarite, and then Lorca came in and read him the riot act, and Stamets stood up. You know, Stamets is, you know, there was a little bit of that tension between military and science, you know, which is a recurring theme. A theme that has already existed in Star Trek. I mean, that's what Wrath of Khan, you know, David Kirk's son versus is all about that. So it's a little bit of the science versus military, and Stamets puts up a good show. You know, he's saying, this is not what I signed up for. I'm going to leave. I'm going to take my spores, which is even
he's like,
taking my spores.
We own those things.
Yeah, and then Lorca said, listen, do you want to be a schmo? Do you want to be a guy who didn't make a drive work, or do you want to be known as, and this is a great line, said, do you want to be said in the same breath as the Wright brothers, Elon Musk, and
Zefram Cochrane.
Which was like, you know, it's funny, because Star Trek always does the funny thing of doing two you know and one you don't.
Yes.
But this time it was three we know, because we know Zefram Cochrane. The kind of the funny one was Elon Musk. It's like, oh, yes. Elon Musk is that important?
Yeah, I thought that was a little strange, but I'll go with it.
Well, it was two things. Either A, one of the producers is friends with Elon Musk, or B, Elon Musk cut him a check, or C, it was like kind of a, you know, it's kind of a zing. It's like, Elon, you got to get your act together. Like, these Tesla cars are cool, but, you know, you have now big shoes to fill. You got to be as big as the Wright brothers and Zefram Cochrane. So I thought that was hilarious. But, and then after that, they try to do their jump again. And then, what's her name? Taylor Palmer? I've forgotten her name. The one who dies. I can't remember her name. I have such a mental block.
The only one that died was Landry.
Landry. I called her Taylor. Oh, man. Yeah, so Landry goes and says, we got to weaponize this bug like an idiot. And, like, I was thinking to myself, you know, when Burnham is clearly like, this is a bad idea. Do not open this cage. What are you thinking? Like, first of all, how is Landry's out of her mind? Like, she thinks, like, getting the claw is going to help build a weapon. Like,
yeah,
now, like,
it seems very, very short-sighted.
Yeah, like, right now, the number one issue is getting the jump drive to work. Like, you got to get the spore drive up before you can even worry about that. You know, like, why does it have to be done immediately? There are people on Corvin 2 that are about to get murdered. That nice little kid who's crying, mommy, mommy, you know, what about her? But Landry's like, no, we got to do this right now. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, how awesome would it be if this monster just chomped her head off? I'm like, that's
pretty close.
I'm like, whoa. And then it picked her up and flung her across the room. And I was like, good. Now I like that actress. I mean, she was on Battlestar. I like her a lot.
Yeah.
And I like the character. Like, she was tough as nails. I could never remember her name, but she was tough as nails. I liked her. And she had some funny lines. Like, her, you know, her delivery was good. But I'm like, good. I'm glad they killed her off, because that shows the show is ready to kick ass. You know, it's not going to play by the rules.
Yeah, it's showing the stakes. I mean, I know we've had some crew member deaths before, but they're fairly few and far between, and they've, you know, they hit the ground running with this.
They really did. They established her as a pretty important member of the crew. Like, end of episode 3, she's Lorca's, you know, right-hand gal. You know, she was like, yes, you know, doing the black ops of getting her the beast in the first place. And now she's ripped to shreds. And, you know, and Lorca, you know, he kind of he didn't like roll his eyes, but he was like, ugh, let her death cannot be in vain. Like, you know, I get the impression, like Burnham said, like, you know, your girl just went nuts in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I tried to stop it.
And
nothing I can do. And, you know, he wasn't too upset. Like, I think I think he kind of knew the drill that maybe he feels guilty a little bit. I don't know that he pushed.
Yeah, because he clearly forced that. I mean, you can see, you've seen several times now that how he's manipulated his crew into, you know, emotional places to get what he wants. Like,
oh, God, yeah, the thing playing the audio.
Yeah, that was crazy. I mean, it definitely worked. I mean, you know, you can see the look on everybody's faces. They're like, wow, you know, if we don't do this, these people are all dead. And there goes half of our supply of dilithium crystals. So, which is a, you know, huge deal for the war effort. So, yeah, it's kind of dark, but it was effective.
Yeah, no, he is an effective leader, albeit not a very, a one of questionable ethics for sure. But he... You know, very manipulative, you know, the way he did with the audio and also what he does with, I jotted this down a little bit. Well, there was something else he did. And the way he manipulated statements by saying, you know.
Yeah, you can be remembered or you could be forgotten.
Or you're going to be nothing. Yeah. You know what's interesting is that Lorca's catchphrase is not that good. You know, Picard had engage.
Yes, and make it so.
Picard had make it so. In the pilot of TNG, he had now hear this also, Picard.
Yes.
He killed that after the pilot. Lorca has go. He said it twice. Like, the first time he said go, I'm like, is that's his engage? That's his thing, is go?
Yeah, it was so unmemorable to the point where I didn't even pick up on it.
No, his word is go. Like, that's not one for T-shirts.
No.
You know, that's not one for, you don't shout that out at a convention when you see this actor. You don't say go.
Yeah, there won't be go, the official Star Trek podcast, anytime in the near future.
No, there won't. So that's one in the you know, we've been doing a lot of praising of the writing staff. I think it's officially time to throw a diss bomb their way and say, guys, go. That's his phrase. I mean, maybe it's they wanted to make it so gritty and so real, and like, you know, Lorca is a man who doesn't care about catchphrases. You know, he just has his eyes on the mission and he doesn't care. So he's just gonna say what's natural, and that's go. I'm like, eh. I don't know. Everything else about the ship is really cool. You got, for God's sakes, you got guys with black Delta shields on. That looks awesome.
Yes, it
you got
did.
Black alerts, for God's sakes.
Which I guess we know what those are now, which means they're doing a spore jump or a spore test.
Doing a spore jump. Black alert. You know, there was a blue alert on Voyager when they go. They tried to do a weird landing. They tried to land on. I forget when they got the blue alert, but it was something where they tried to land on the side of the planet under less than perfect
conditions,
circumstances,
yeah,
conditions. That's another thing. When they finally get to the the planet, the colony, when they're trying to save it, the ship is like just kind of hovering not that far above the colony. I think some Star Trek fans, they get a little nuts when ships are in the atmosphere of a planet, because I think for many, many, many years it was established that they couldn't do that. But then the recent movies did it. Well, Voyager did it, and it caused a blue alert that I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And then the movies did it, particularly Into Darkness did it, and everybody went bananas about that. And then in the first episode, when they're on that, the prologue of the first episode, where the ship appears.
The desert planet.
Yeah, that dumb scene that we should just forget about. That stupid scene where they contact the ship by walking in the shape of a Delta signal. It's so ridiculous. That is another example. So I don't have any bone to pick with that. I don't know one way or the other, but I know that some fans get all nutty about that. I'm more nutty about putting nipple clamps on the tardigrade to make the ship work. I don't quite understand how that works.
Yeah, that was a little strange that they highlighted that. The question I had about the ship floating over the colony, they clearly did the second jump. what came after the ship there that blew up all the birds of prey? I was a little confused by that. I don't think they mentioned it.
When they left, they like threw out a bunch of like photon torpedoes or something.
Okay. I mean, they looked pretty,
they mined
pretty
the area.
Big, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like all the explosions in the sky. It was my interpretation was he wanted the ships to get real close, and then he would vanish and like mine the sky, and then they would all just
I feel
blow
like
up.
That was a bit of a risky move, I mean, because they were so close to the colony. Like, what if one of those missed and it hit the colony? I mean,
oh, that's a good point. Well, you know, that's why all those guys were busy plugging numbers away. You know, the woman with the metal face, that's what she was doing. She was adding up the telemetry of the blah, 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 blah to make sure that it would reach 20-point mark 0.6. You know, that's how it goes. You know, want to start wrapping up here, but the other thing we should mention is I dug when Laurel comes back to Voke. And she's like, I'm going to take you to the matriarchs of Mokai.
Yes.
I'm like, what? I'm like, what? This is like a coven of like elder Klingon, you know, wise women. And I'm just like, what is this going to look like? This is going to be wild. So I hope that's in the next week's episode.
Yeah, no, they definitely threw a curveball to me with the actions of the Klingons. And I'm definitely interested in it. Because I was very confused about how they were going to... I mean, I believed Laurel turned, honestly. And, you know, they threw me for a loop, at least.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
I was very curious about what that matriarch of Mokai was. And, you know, the fact that he said you must sacrifice everything. So, I'm curious to see that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have written down here another note. Big Saru diss, and he is not wrong. I forgot when, but Saru must have dissed her. Saru's always giving her a diss, you know? It's he's pretty rough, you know? He says what he means.
He did have a pretty funny line, and I really can't remember what it was either, but it was something about something to burn him.
Well, he said something about, like, when his threat ganglia were up, he was like, he said something like, well, I hope they haven't been wrong thus far, or something like that. Like, I always trust him this far. The other funny thing was... speaking of diss bombs, I love this is like a line I'm going to use a lot. When Cole comes back and he's at first you think he's going to kiss Vok's ass a little bit, and he's like, "Please bring me back, you know, I want to make peace with you." He gets down on his knee, and then Vok's like, "Please, no Klingon shall kneel before another." Blah blah blah, and he's like, "I have hurled disrespect." And I'm like, "That's awesome." I want to see a Klingon hurl disrespect at one another. I just thought that was really cool.
That was a very interesting scene because I it was completely unexpected that it would happen, and I should have known better that there would be a turnaround later on because we had heard that he was a major antagonist. So,
yeah, and not just that. The scene beforehand when they're in like the map room, the astrometrics lab or whatever.
Yeah.
And Vok is just like, and he's got these gross nails and he's like carving light out of this three-dimensional map room. And it just was all pink and purple and green and, you know, just it looked great. I had no idea what the hell was going on. But
yeah, neither
great,
did I.
You know? And then he's like, I ate Michelle Yeoh. I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? Well, you know, Brian, this awesome show that we're talking about, Star Trek Discovery, is available in the United States, you know, in a very new way.
It is.
Yeah, if you live in Canada, you can watch it on Space Network. If you live elsewhere, you can watch it on the Netflix. But if you live here in the good old U.S. of A., if you live here in the good old USA, you're going to watch it in a new way, in a way that I think is working out pretty well so far. It's called CBS All Access. And if you spend $6 a month, you can get access to Star Trek Discovery the minute it comes out. By the way, 15 minutes early, 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I texted you as soon as I started it, and I'm like, wow, is this supposed to be 8 or 8:30?
Right. So it usually drops at like 8:18 or so. 8:17, 8:18 Eastern time, and then 5:30 out on the West Coast. I guess if you live in Hawaii, God knows when it drops. That is technically
that
the
is
USA.
A good question, yeah.
So. But anyhow... CBS All Access gets you the new show, gets you every other Star Trek show ever, gets you a lot of legacy CBS programming. You know, you can watch old episodes of Cheers if you want. They have like a 300, 400, 500, however many episodes of Cheers are in existence or on CBS All Access, plus the new shows like CSI and whatnot, and the good there's so many good shows now. The good, what is the Good Wife spinoff called?
I don't remember.
The Good Fight. You know, there's a show. There's the Good Wife. There's the Good Fight. There's the Good Doctor and the Good. Oh boy. There's another good show. It's ridiculous right now. But the one that's good is the one that's affiliated with The Good Wife, and it's on CBS All Access.
Yes, like that was one of the first original shows that launched on the network, I believe.
Yeah, we know it, so we clearly we haven't watched it yet, but it's very good. And you could also watch live CBS if you do, what do you call it? If you're a cord cutter and you want to watch, you know, whatever the football game is, or later in the year if you want to watch the news or Face the Nation on a Sunday morning, you can watch CBS live through your CBS All Access.
The bottom line is there's a lot more to do than Discovery, although clearly that's our priority here.
Right. Yeah. So it's $6 a month with the commercials. It's $10 a month without the commercials. Brian and I both do the 6 month. You know what? I don't mind doing it with the commercials because this is a very interactive show for me and the rest of the Star Trek community. So I fire it up, I hit play, and then when the commercials are on, I go on Twitter and make some silly comments, and then I come back to the show. I don't pay attention to the ads, you know.
Yeah, I was writing down notes during the commercial breaks.
Yeah, whoever listens to ads are crazy. You should fast forward them, right? No, of course not.
Well,
the deal. CBS All Access is sponsoring the show, and we love them. And so far, it's great. They're 4 for 4 so far. 4 for 4 in Discovery. Eventually, there'll be an episode I hate, and I'll be honest, but it hasn't happened yet. So listen, there's a lot to talk about. That's our first brain dump now. It's been really just a few minutes. I'm probably going to watch it again maybe now because my wife hasn't seen it yet and she's been keeping up. And she'll probably notice all these things and I wish I could have mentioned them. I love that Stamets did mention the Hawking radiation firewall. A nice shout out to Star Trek alumni Stephen Hawking. And there's also that great kind of comedy smash cut, which is like straight out of... You know, straight out of like classic sitcoms, like, you know, the Honeymooners or something, when Lorca says to the Admiral, "Yes, we'll have this up and running, you know, in no time." Cut to Stamets. There's no way we can do this in, you know, classic sitcom that, move, but it worked really
that
well.
That Admiral looked very familiar to me, and I can't pinpoint who it is. I'm going to have to look that up later.
She was, you know, she seemed stern but fair. So that's the deal. Brian, any last thoughts on episode 4?
Yes. Did you see the preview for the next episode?
No.
Oh, yes. There was a preview right afterwards where we see... Can I say it? Do you have a problem with that? Or
no, tell me.
Sure.
We see Rainn Wilson?
We do see Rainn Wilson, and we see Captain Lorca get captured by the Klingons. So when you mentioned that point earlier on about the seafood comparison, I was thinking, like, wow, maybe there's something to that.
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't watch it. Oh,
yeah, so we see Lorca go to a ship on his own, and he gets captured by the Klingons, and he gets experimented on, and he gets thrown in a cell with Harry Mudd.
Whoa.
So
I'd heard that Harry Mudd is discovered in prison.
Yes.
That much I knew, but I did not know that.
The vibe I got from Harry Mudd in the brief seconds of this preview was that he's not going to be one and done. He's going to be in a number of episodes, I think. He may stick around.
Awesome. Good. Good, because Rainn Wilson is great, and that's really cool. I did notice this past week, New York Comic Con, where you were at, the Discovery had a huge panel, which I was not at, unfortunately.
I was unable to attend either.
They had an event at the Paley Center, which I also wasn't at, but I did read some coverage of those two events. I read a report on StarTrek.com about the Comic-Con panel, which is thorough and has great photographs. You should check out StarTrek.com. And then also one of the Star Trek news sites, which was TrekNews.net. There's a couple of great Star Trek news sites in addition to StarTrek.com. TrekNews.net is great, and TrekCore is the other one. TrekCore is just amazing. TrekCore is really cool. Just the whole legacy of Star Trek and great images, and I've been big fans of TrekCore for years and years and years. I did see that in their recap, they mentioned that one of the producers, I believe it was Gretchen Berg, one of the few producers that I haven't personally met, but Gretchen Berg did make a reference to the fact that we are going to see other characters from canon appear on this show.
Interesting.
At some point. It's not just Sarek, it's not just Harry Mudd. at some point, and maybe she's talking season two, I don't know, but anyway, keep your eyes peeled. Or, and maybe she just means the Gorn skeleton that's back there.
Yes, which is very prominent in one of the shots in the in Lorca's war room, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. The Gorn skeleton and the Cardassian voles and whatnot. Oh, you know, I've never been much of a tech aficionado with the weaponry, but there's that one shot when Burnham goes into that room, you know, Lorca's Den of Iniquity, and there's a shot of, like, Batleths and all sorts of disruptors and phasers and phase cannons and all kinds of weapons. And I would imagine that people are going to be picking those apart and saying, this is Romulan tech, this is Cardassian tech, blah, blah, blah. To me, I recognize the Batleths. They were the new Batleths, but I didn't really do a I haven't had a chance to, like, do a freeze frame.
Yeah, that's
and look
definitely
at it yet,
definitely but, something to freeze frame later on.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some cool stuff in that. Well, we'll talk about that next week. So until then, everybody, thanks again for listening. Thanks for watching and exploring Star Trek Discovery with us. Just a little sneak peek, since next week is the week that it appears, thanks to Brian's eagle eye watching the preview, if Harry Mudd is in next week's episode, at some point next week we'll run our Rainn Wilson interview, which we had in the bank under the understanding that we wouldn't run it until the episode aired. So some point after next Sunday, maybe next Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll run that episode too.
And also, I read in the news that we'll be getting an extra episode this year rather than next year. So we'll be getting 9 now and 6 next year.
Whoa. This just in. My mind just did a spore drive in my head, man. That's awesome. All right, so cool. So thanks again for listening. And if you want to discuss this week's, go to our wall at facebook.com/engage the official Star Trek podcast. That's facebook.com/engage the official Star Trek podcast. Or you can hit me up on Twitter. That's at Jay Hoffman, at Jay Hoffman, JHOFFMAN. Brian remains a non-Twitter gentleman, perhaps for the better. So if you want to get any messages to him, you got to go through me. But, thanks again, and we'll talk to you again next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.